Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 13th day of November, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And if you're wondering what's going on around the world, the best way to phrase it today might be, this one is for all the marbles. Not only are we seeing the biggest attempt at brazenly in-your-face election manipulation, and yes, outright theft, forget Russia, the communists in Broward County really know how it's done. Although, come to think of it, they're probably not nearly as good at it as the communists in Maricopa County, Arizona, who've already declared their fraud complete and declared one of the worst candidates ever in U.S. history, the new senator-elect. No surprise, she's already gotten a really flaky endorsement from the neo-socialist she's taking over for. But at least she hates the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the President, and everyone else who believes anything on that list might matter. Right, Jeff Flake? Meanwhile, most of the press continues to insist that if you believe there might be something crooked going on, and a whole lot of evidence to support it, in Florida, Arizona, California, Georgia, and so on, you must be a right-wing extremist, probably a racist, and especially a conspiracy theorist. But on the other hand, we don't need any evidence at all to suggest that if you don't believe the Robert Mueller investigation into the dreaded Russia election rigging conspiracy is the most important thing happening in America with a K, well, you're also a racist, a bigot, and a can you be a conspiracy theorist if you don't believe in a conspiracy with no evidence? Well, as far as the press is concerned, you betcha. Maybe that should take us to this next conspiracy theory. There are those that suggest the fires in California are the result of nutcase mismanagement by the likes of Governor Moonbeam. No shortage of evidence there, and there's arguably a lot more evidence of arson in the various fires that have plagued California now for months than anything associated with the bogus Mueller investigation to boot. Officials are claiming that the so-called Northern California Camp fire may have been sparked by down PG&E power lines. No word, however, on what or who may have caused that. Meanwhile, though, the death toll for that Northern California fire, which has almost completely destroyed the small town of Paradise, once a popular retirement community with about a quarter of the residents there over the age of 65, has risen to 42, while 220 still remain missing, making it now the deadliest fire in the history of that state, while remains continue to be found in charred cars and in the ruins of people's homes. As of Monday night, the fire has already destroyed over 113,000 acres and was considered about 30% contained. On Monday, President Trump did approve a major disaster declaration for the state of California at the request of Governor Moonbeam. After being essentially blamed for the fires in the days prior to that, he tweeted back in kind, saying there's no reason for these massive, deadly, and costly fires in California except that forest management is so poor. In spite of the billions of dollars of federal funds annually, he noted, so many lives have been lost, quote, all because of gross mismanagement of the forests, unquote, whereupon he threatened that if they don't fix the problem, there might not be any more federal payments. Governor Moonbeam, a.k.a. Jerry Brown, eminent pseudoscientist, went on to blame non-existent man-made global warming, although you know they don't call it that, saying, quote, managing all the forests everywhere we can does not stop climate change. Neither, of course, do lots and lots of multimillionaires driving subsidized Teslas and Prii. But hey, Governor Moonbeam, what's that got to do with failure to manage fire breaks and water resources? The simpering fool went on to claim that it would take hundreds of billions of dollars to continue to fight California's growing number of wildfires, whereupon he again blamed climate change for, quote, threatening our whole way of life, unquote. And I guess he's referring to the threat to Rodeo Drive. Maybe somebody ought to ask California's former farmers what really threatened their former way of life. Meanwhile, though, just to inject a note on the other side of the actual science equation, we talked about this quite some time ago. September 27, 2018, Dr. Tony Phillips wrote, "The sun is entering one of the deepest solar minima of the space age." Data from NASA's TIMED, or timed satellite, showed that the thermosphere, the outer layer of air surrounding our planet, is cooling and shrinking, literally decreasing the radius of the atmosphere. And to help track the latest developments, Martin Milzak of NASA's Langley Research Center and his colleagues recently introduced the Thermosphere Climate Index, warning that the cooling event that they're talking about, quote, could happen in a matter of months, unquote. So no, Governor Moonbeam, it's not the deplorables with their SUVs out there in the valley, and it's not man-made global warming at all. But But a lot of people's lives have been lost and ruined, and yeah, no doubt it has more to do with criminality than climate. But based on press coverage, column inches, and banner headlines, it certainly looks like most of the waste stream is far more concerned about which celebrities lost their homes in the Malibu area due to the Southern California fires than those who lost their lives up north. But one thing's for sure, when people are concerned about losing everything they've worked for all their lives, or their lives themselves, that tends to distract them from the other issue of just plain losing what's left of their country, which does now seem to have shifted into warp drive. And there's more chicanery here than we could do in a half hour yesterday or today, so we'll just start with some of the headlines since then. More ballot chaos in Florida, said who knows how many headlines yesterday. Rick Scott's campaign has announced three more election lawsuits against heavily Democrat Palm Beach and Broward counties. Obvious incompetence here is merely an excuse, your host suggests, for something far more sinister. Not like we haven't seen evidence of that, election after election, especially in the case of Broward County. And it does seem like the incompetent officials haven't yet had enough time to completely rig the election. They're saying they won't make the latest Thursday deadline either. Meanwhile, more provisional ballot boxes keep getting found in the unlikeliest places. Here's one discovered inside an Avis rental car at Fort Lauderdale Airport. This comes via investigative journalist Laura Loomer, who included pictures in her coverage showing two ballot boxes, one red, the other gray. The gray one is labeled Provisional Ballot Box, with a sign that says Broward County Supervisor of Elections and a purple tag showing ERT Region 13, along with other identifying numbers. Now, folks, at this point, you're probably wondering the same thing your host is. Gee, were these the ballots that were never supposed to have been included because they were made up after the fact and inserted? Or are these the ballots that were being removed and eventually, as we've seen Brenda Snipes do before, destroyed? I guess if they turn out to have all been marked only for Nelson and Gillum, we have our answer. And since the peons in the press aren't allowed to see the ballots or even the raw totals, we probably still have our answer. The story says attorney and Broward County GOP state committee man, did they allow those there? Richard DiNapoli says he received a call from an Avis employee informing him of the found ballot boxes, now they're plural, after sheriff's deputies were initially unwilling to investigate. Hey, does that sound familiar? About 20 minutes after receiving the tip, though, a heavy police presence arrived and blocked off all traffic to the airport and announced a bomb threat. I guess if I wanted to cover something up, that would be a great excuse, wouldn't it? But later, they tweeted it was all clear. And no doubt, by this point, they were probably right.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
After this latest incident, GOP operative Ali Alexander of Stop the Steal wrote that the FBI needs to kick in the door. Whoops, the FBI? Do we trust them either? Anyway, somebody ought to kick in the door, interview all Board of Election employees, shutter the Broward County elections offices, seize all the ballots, and put a stop to the Democrats disrupting the election. This is a bigger story than we could have ever imagined, and not only Floridians, but the entire country need to demand answers, unquote. Doesn't sound like that's going to be allowed to happen, though, without external force. On Monday, a Broward County judge, this time, denied Florida Governor Rick Scott's request for an injunction to impound and secure all the voting machines when they're no longer being used to count or rig ballots. Hey, folks, no hint of obstruction of justice there, right? He did admit that there needs to be some additional layer of confidence, yeah, sure, in the vote recount system in Broward County and offered a compromise. Add three Broward County Sheriff's deputies to the current lineup of BSO officers overseeing the recount. Oh, yeah, folks, that'll fix it now, won't it? And I guess given just how corrupt this whole thing has now been revealed to be, and so far we're only talking Florida. Arizona may be just as bad. A quick recap of some of the major chicanery may be in order. This comes courtesy of the All News Pipeline's Susan Duclos, who notes that the supervisor of elections, sick, the at best incompetent and more likely incredibly corrupt Brenda Snipes has, quote, a long history of trouble, as the Sun Sentinel puts it, including a court ruling that she broke election law by destroying ballots, by leaving major amendments off ballots in 2016, and suddenly discovering almost 1,000 ballots all the way back in 2012. See, she's gotten better at this. A week after the election then. Once again, she is the poster girl for incompetence at best, utter corruption at worst, and probably a mixture of the two. Otherwise, she'd have gotten away with it more effectively, like, you know, some of those other places seem to have. In the days since the polls closed last Tuesday, Broward County has mysteriously discovered, sick, and yeah, sure, some 80,000 additional votes affecting the Florida Senate and governor's races. And the numbers are really illustrative. On November 7th, the day after the midterm election, the real election that is, Governor Scott was leading Senator Nelson for that Senate race by over 38,000 votes, according to Florida Today. But with the newly discovered ballots, the lead is now down to just over 12,000 votes, showing there's an extreme disparity in the ratios of the discovered ballots between the D's and the R's. Does that raise any statistical eyebrows? Well, it certainly does help to explain why they don't want people looking at those ballots. And furthermore, her antics include refusing to report continued vote tallies, as Florida law requires. Well, or at least once required when they had a law. And now you can see why that failure is particularly important here. And that forced Governor Scott to file that emergency lawsuit, which seems to have been pretty well ignored anyway. Originally, though, Judge Carol Lisa Phillips sided with the governor by ruling that there, quote, had been a violation of the Florida Constitution by Snipes and her so-called officials, as well as the state's Public Records Act, by not turning over the required and now requested records. Yesterday, we noted how Snipes managed to mix rejected ballots with valid ones and thus taint the entire count, and at least in one instance actually got caught at it. But things get worse, believe it or not, says this piece, as former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Kottkamp has claimed. They have an affidavit filed by a Broward election employee in support of these lawsuits, claiming eyewitness account of election staff filling in blank ballots. And when this was reported, guess what happened? The employee was fired and told not to come back. Good news is, the employee seems to still be alive, however. Maybe we'll talk about more on that score in a minute. Here's one that ought to raise eyebrows. No, not because the number is surprising, but because it comes from Gary Fineout at NBC News. Nearly 200,000 Florida voters may not be citizens, and tens of thousands of them could be dropped, well, if we don't have the continued corruption anyway, from the election rolls this year. And notice that's many, many times the margin of difference in these contested gubernatorial and senatorial races. Imagine that. And guess what? Florida law, as if that still matters, actually requires voters to be a U.S. citizen residing in the state, and they don't allow someone to vote if they're a convicted felon or have not had their civil rights restored. Unless, I guess, they're in Broward or Palm Beach counties, in which case, have at it! And if that sounded a bit cynical at this point, folks, yeah, it was certainly intended to. I do think the author of the Gateway Pundit story here, Christina Layla, has a valid point. She concludes her recap of all this by saying that from witnesses watching Enterprise rental trucks delivering boxes of ballots to election officials blocking the view of observers as ballots are bundled and put in bags, the American people seem to have rightly lost faith in the so-called election process. Somehow I do think the word sick needs to be in there too. Election process just doesn't seem to be what we've been watching. I'm not sure whether the word ought to be outright scam or election theft, or maybe calling it a sales job associated with the vote placebo comes closer to the truth. One thing's for sure, faith is no longer a word I'd use in the same sentence with anything associated with this great big blue smokescreen. One more quick election eyebrow raiser, as if we needed it, in Georgia, where the gubernatorial race has been decided. Republican Brian Kemp won, but the socialist Stacey Abrams won't concede, perhaps because she knows her sister is a judge presiding over campaign lawsuits, says Tim Brown at the Freedom Outpost. Can you say corruption and conflict of interest? And that the massive voter fraud taking place in Fulton County isn't enough to rig the election yet, but if they keep dragging this thing out long enough, it just might be. All of this corruption, though, really is just the tip of the iceberg. While it does seem to help to explain George Soros' interest in owning a whole bunch of district attorneys and attorneys general across the nation, all of these really boil down to just puzzle pieces in the complete destruction of what's left of the rule of law. Crooked DAs, crooked judges, crooked election officials, crooked cops, and of course you can work your way on up, right to the 7th floor of the J. Edgar Hoover building. So let's start there for a minute and then fill in some of the gaps. Here's a piece from John Kirikou via Consortium News and, of course, Zero Hedge about a former CIA officer who notes that John Brennan and James Clapper shouldn't escape prosecution, but the rigging of the election here seems to almost guarantee that unless somebody gets on the stick quickly, they will. I'll say it again here, folks. This battle is for all the marbles. Recently declassified documents, it says, show that the former CIA director and former director of National Intelligence, SIC, approved illegal spying on Congress and then classified their own crime. They ought to face punishment, but if the blue smokescreen has its way here, guess what's really going to happen? Nevertheless, Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, it says, made a dramatic announcement this month that almost nobody in America paid any attention to. His statement said that 4 years ago, he had asked the Intelligence Community Inspector General to release two congressional notifications written by those two criminals, former CIA Director John Brennan and former DNI James Clapper. Grassley had had his request to declassify the documents ignored repeatedly throughout the last 2 years of the Obama regime. Surprise, surprise. He decided to try again because all of the Obama people at the CIA and DNI are gone now. Where are they? Broward County? Anyway, this time the request was approved. So what was the information finally declassified? It was written confirmation that John Brennan ordered CIA hackers to intercept the emails of all potential or possible intelligence community whistleblowers who may have been trying to contact the Congressional Oversight Committees, specifically the Senate Judiciary Committee and Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. So, simply put, Brennan ordered his people to hack into the Senate email system again, and then classified the very documents that would have revealed his crime. And there's a lot more to this one, but I think you get the point. As the former CIA official says, Brennan and Clapper don't think the law applies to them, but it ought to. Which kind of makes your host wonder, if Hillary isn't the 2020 presidential nominee again, as the Wall Street Journal seems to sadly think may be the case, maybe Brennan will step forward. There's a whole lot of criminality in the private sector, too, or what was once called the private sector, but really it's the public-private partners. The Free Thought Project reminds us that a month ago, Facebook and Twitter, without warning or justification, deleted the pages of a whole bunch of websites, including theirs, the Free Thought Project, and also one called Police the Police that had over 5 million followers. During the purge, they removed hundreds of other pages, including massive police accountability groups like Cop Block, filming cops, and stifled the reach of Photography is Not a Crime. What's the point? If it's not already obvious, folks, yeah, if you're planning and implementing a whole lot of rampant corruption, it would be helpful to have your private partners make sure that it doesn't get reported on. They stopped Representative Matt Gaetz in Florida now, didn't they? Facebook is also purging its own ranks of anybody who might actually have read the Constitution. Even the Daily Mail is reporting on this one. Their headline says that a high-ranking Facebook executive was forced to resign over his support for Donald Trump. Actually, and perhaps even worse, he gave $10,000 to an anti-Clinton campaign during the 2016 election. And after that was discovered, Mark Zuckerberg, it says, put a lot of pressure on him, but it wasn't enough. I do like Zero Hedge's take just a bit better. Every so often, they say, Silicon Valley's virtue signaling, shadow banning, anti-conservative media titans appear in Congress or try to devise a quick PR campaign to show the world just how truly impartial they really are, with absolutely no liberal bias. And every single time, it seems to backfire in their ideological faces as the truth emerges from their fake, hypocritical mask. Take the case of a former Facebook executive, Oculus co-founder, and virtual reality wunderkind Palmer Luckey, who was a rising star of Silicon Valley, when at the height of the 2016 presidential contest, he made a fatal mistake and donated a modest $10,000 to an anti-Hitlery group, which sparked a backlash from his colleagues, led to him being put on leave, and finally, 6 months later, he's been fired. Could be worse, though. As another story from Freedom Outpost points out, dead men tell no tales, especially in Broward County. Dean Garrison has the story up of three recent whistleblowers there who ended up dead. Now, in fairness, only one of them had to do directly with voter fraud. The others had to do with the other big Broward County issue, gun control. And a couple of sheriff's deputies who may have had the temerity to question the politicization of the Parkland shooting there by their notorious anti-gun sheriff. Are you starting to see all the connections here? The homicide that did relate directly to election fraud was Barenton J. Wisenant Jr., a federal prosecutor from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Miami who happened to be investigating voter fraud. His office was in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's congressional district. Shortly before his death, says the story, news spread on social media that Wisenant was involved in a recent fraud probe involving the DNC, although none of the media reported that, and he may have paid for it with his life. Never forget, of course, to follow the money. That's important when it comes to fraud as well. There's a J.P. Morgan Chase trader, I've talked about this over the last few days, who has now pled guilty to gold manipulation. Evidently, he learned how from his superiors. And the rare bit of good news, according to Clint Sener and GoldEagle.com, is that the man has decided to turn state's evidence. Who knows, folks? Maybe he won't even end up jumping off the top of an office building. One more follow the money story today from Forbes.com and Norbert Michael. Last week, it says, brought new revelations regarding the evil Obama administration effort called Operation Choke Point. The idea is to freeze out politically disfavored businesses from the financial system. And if you're thinking it sounds like something right out of the Third Reich, you're correct. Representative Blaine Lutkemeyer of Missouri, who helped lead a multi-year effort to shut that program down, has highlighted some of the newest findings and pointed out that stopping Operation Choke Point was not, at least that's what they say, a partisan issue. Because it was so over the top, even some of the leftists in Congress called it an egregious affront to the rule of law. Oh, and just in case you don't remember, Operation Choke Point consisted of bureaucrats in a number of independent federal agencies, among them the FDIC, taking it upon themselves to shut down legal businesses, everything from payday lenders to especially firearms dealers, and cut them out of the banking system. Which, says the story, given the U.S. regulatory framework, was an easy op to pull off. Says Forbes, it's now clear these unelected government officials set out to harm law-abiding citizens. And that brings me to the headline here, which says new unsealed documents, hopefully they'll keep coming out, at least until the new Congress shuts them off, show top FDIC officials that are still in Washington, still in the swamp, were running Operation Choke Point. And that, of course, leads your host to the real point of all of these stories today, at least in my opinion. If the corruption and election rigging is allowed to come to its inevitable climax, an intended conclusion, that'll be the end of any and every attempt to actually drain the swamp and send the guilty people to jail, at minimum. It's why the Clappers and Brennans and FBI criminals in Broward County and Maricopa County and other criminals are so anxious to make sure that they get away with what they've been working so hard to get away with. It's why one hand washes the other. It's why corrupt judges don't want to investigate corrupt election officials. It's why you're not allowed to see vote totals or much less the machines that were used to put them there. It's why the media distracts you with a blue smoke screen, while to Facebook, Twitter, and Google basically shut any alternative opinions or facts down. You can't be allowed to hear about it, talk about it, or understand it either. And your politically incorrect business won't be allowed to clear charges or eventually even take orders over the corrupt, managed web. Yes, folks, I'll say it again. This one really is for all the marbles. And what I think we're seeing here is that things are building to a head. And if President Trump and those who see that there really is such a thing, or at least was, as truth, justice, and the American way, and they've got very little time to reinstitute it, or else it'll be shut down and cut off forever, well, basically, they had better hurry and get it done while it's still possible. Because as the election rigging drags out, and more and more and more leftist votes just kind of keep appearing right out of the same cesspools where they've been appearing, that window's rapidly closing. And we'll close today with one more warning. The headline really nails it. This comes from the Daily Mail, and it says, Russia and China are attacking Google. What? You mean their own tool? A virtual war game experiment, it says, has hit the search giant with the worst ever internet hijacking that intercepted search, cloud, and business services. As a major internet traffic diversion disrupted Google services, SICK, and rerouted their data. Security experts said it was a war game, a prelude to similar attacks from the same places in the future. Google says there's no reason to believe it was malicious. And right there, folks, you now know everything you need to know about exactly what is going on, but ultimately, they don't intend to tell you about. Thanks for joining us today, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.